Welcome to On Being Happier, Thinking with Heart and Mind, a podcast emphasizing the heart's role in happiness, in sound decision-making, and in being at our best. Hi, my name is Ron Schneebaum. I'm a physician, work at the outpatient arm of the Children's Hospital at Dartmouth, and serve on the clinical faculty at Dartmouth College's Geisel School of Medicine. I'm convinced that nothing's more important to the human psyche than love. I've worked at thinking with both heart and mind for over 40 years. While intellectual analysis generally carries the banner of thinker, to leave out the heart is to leave out something vital. Language reminds us of the importance of the heart. To do something half-heartedly or to not put our hearts into an activity means we didn't do it well. And to be heartless is not a compliment. We involve our hearts wherever we care the most, where heart and mind work together, we're happier, have richer relationships, and greater practical success. We are fully present and we are fully ourselves. It's the art of living well. Each episode of this podcast presents a different aspect of thinking with heart and mind. Together, I hope they paint a full and broad picture. I developed this podcast to not only describe a lost art, but to also offer challenges and tools that interested listeners can use to incorporate thinking with the heart and mind into all aspects of their lives. The ideas in this podcast are my own, and the stories have been altered to protect privacy. This podcast is not a substitute for medical advice. If you are experiencing significant difficulties, please seek professional help. I thank you for joining me on this venture. My very best and be well, Ron. Episode 23, Navigating Political Differences with Heart and Mind. This episode is published around the time the Supreme Court made its decision on Roe v. Wade. Because of the inflammatory nature of this decision, I worried that it might be insensitive to publish this now. I spoke to a friend who said, no, it's exactly at this time that you should publish it. A dad came to my practice with his son. He was wearing a baseball hat of the political party that is diametrically opposed to my own beliefs. He came in because his son was ill, and part of my job was to see past his hat, to not even see that he was wearing a hat, and to attend to his concerns about his son, and to speak to him from that perspective. Another dad came to see me at a different time, and after seeing his child, we had a little bit of extra time, so we chatted. The family, I learned, lives in the woods and relies on hunting for much of its food. It was deer season, and I spoke with him about what it's like to hunt. I grew up in New York City, and hunting was never part of my life. I asked him about the process. He was especially a bow hunter. We talked about the practicalities of finding deer and what to do once you have one. We talked about butchering at the site, about getting it butchered, and about how he stores his meat. It was a fun conversation and built a relationship. I see children who go to various kinds of schools. Some go to religious schools, some go to non-religious schools, and some are homeschooled. It's not my job to judge where they go. My only role is to support them, to ask questions about their education, about their learning, about what works, to learn about them. I take the approach of developing a relationship for several reasons. It's nice to know that your doctor is interested in you, but more than that, out of developing a connection, it provides the space where people can ask me deeper questions if they come up. If a family faces a tragedy, a loss, or has a perplexing medical problem, they know that I'm there and they know that I'm for them and I'm with them. That's invaluable in this relationship. It's not uncommon that teenagers who are having psychosocial issues will say to their parents that they don't want to see a therapist, and then they'll say, though, that they will speak with me. This also extends to my life outside of my exam room. I interact with my office staff independent of what their political views are. I don't know them, and I generally don't ask about them, but if somebody had opposing political views, the office is not the place to discuss them. The office is the place to learn to work together on behalf of the patients that we see. I live in a condominium in close proximity to my neighbors. And when I go home, there too, I look beyond political beliefs and develop relationships. That's what we want. You want to have a neighbor you can say hello to. You want to have a neighbor who you know would be there if you ever have a problem, even if it's something as simple as helping to move something heavy. This isn't a place for me to shun my neighbors because of their political beliefs. It doesn't solve any problem at all. The same could be said for family. In fact, when I think about it, it's all the relationships where I don't have a choice in who the people are. I don't choose who comes into my office. I don't choose who works there. I don't choose my neighbors, and I don't choose my family members. If I can create the space of friendship, if people have problems, they can come to me. Catchphrases and party slogans can cause great triggering. Ignore them. These are words that are put together by media people to mobilize their forces. People who say them generally haven't really thought them through with depth. A second part of the question of navigating through political differences with heart and mind has to do with how people change their minds. For if we have political differences, what I would like to do is have you be on my side. But it's not that easy. I often tell medical students that the easiest thing for a physician to do is to tell people what to do and what not to do. I can sit at my desk in the evening with my feet up eating ice cream and talk to someone on the phone about the importance of exercise and eating well. Saying something that brings about change is a more complicated task. Here we'll look at several ways that can bring about change. Readers of books and people who go to lectures or participate in social media are there because they have the mindset where they want to learn and grow. When a person is interested in learning and growing, their ideas can be presented that will cause the person to rethink. But without this frame of mind, without this interest in learning and growing, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to affect real change. Protests can affect change. Generally, however, at protests, it's not those who attend the protest that have their minds changed. It's those who watch it later. When the late Representative John Lewis, as well as others, walked across the Pettus Bridge and were clubbed on the head, many who watched from home were shocked, and this began to change how many viewed the civil rights movement. The problem with demonstrations is that the demonstrations themselves can be filled with anger and hatred. The challenge is to be able to drop that after the demonstration and be a full human being. A way to see this would be by imagining that after a march or protest, you saw a child crying. This child you discovered was lost and was wearing the paraphernalia of the opposing party. To not carry any of the demonstration with you means that you would see that child no differently than you would see any child, and when you found that child's parents, you would see beyond their political parties, and you'd be human beings embracing the idea that a lost child found their parents. Change can also occur if we understand the other person's point of view and can make a point. Pediatricians are charged with discussing drugs and alcohol with young people. To just tell them, don't do this and don't do that, won't have any real effect. My challenge is to meet them in a place where we're human beings and to tell them something of what I've learned. So I do it this way. I say, first, when it comes to drugs and alcohol, we have no idea about its effect on the young growing brain. So it's not advised at your age at all. On the other hand, let me talk about decisions you'll have to make when you get older. From my perspective, one could say that the goal of life is to live fully and enjoy it maximally. Now imagine there was somebody who loved to play basketball. And here I try to imagine what this teenager might enjoy. And I say, if this person loved to play basketball, he or she would play whenever they had a chance, and they would play with friends, and they'd play by themselves, and they would practice. Suppose they got a set of virtual reality glasses. And when they put these glasses on and stood in their living room, it was as if they were playing basketball. If over time they stopped going to the hoops and instead stood in their living room going, ooh, ah, wow, they got robbed. Instead of playing basketball, they looked at something make-believe. It's like that with drugs and alcohol. I'm not saying that you can't go to a party and enjoy yourself, getting high or having some drinks. But if that's what you do all the time, instead of learning how to make yourself happy, you give yourself up to something else. You potentially lose that ability to learn how to enjoy yourself and how to enjoy life maximally. If you ever discover that you drink, smoke, vape, or take edibles because you're depressed and they make you happy, that's a real warning sign. That will never help, and you might need to seek a professional to get you through this. The idea of understanding another and speaking from that can also happen with political differences. I wondered about the great divide that we see in the United States in particular and looked for its origin. I spent years, and one day I had a flash of insight while on a bicycle ride. I had been riding through the woods and came to a small town with a general store. Opposite the general store were some picnic tables, and I sat on one of them to eat my lunch. Nearby were a group of men and a few women who looked like they were in the late 50s, early 60s, and were a bit scruffy at the edge. Across the street were their motorcycles, and seeing them made me think about education. The goal of modern education is to serve the intellect. The ones who are at the top go to the best colleges and get the highest paying jobs. There's also a divide in personality. Typically, those who are the brightest aren't the ones who are the warmest and the ones who are most sociable. So somewhere deep inside, a significant dislike for those who call them stupid and put them at the bottom of the class grows. Now, when there's a political party that says, let's fight those bright ones, I'm on your side, let's get our due, now is our time, it's not hard to imagine that there's a deep, untouched anger that gets stirred. And this anger can be so powerful that it will look past lies and look past things that are said that really might not be true. On the other hand, when I was growing up, our history books taught us that the great industrialists were the ones to look up to. Now, when I think about them, these were people who didn't care about their workers. They also didn't care about the earth, despoiling it wherever they went and pouring waste products into the sky and soil. The other side of the political spectrum looks at those who got cast aside, those who weren't given power, those who weren't cared for. They could be people, or it could even be the earth itself. The opposite side of the political spectrum looks at those who are missed and feels compassion for them and feels we need to do something with them. By understanding these two sides of this clash, I develop compassion, I develop some insight, I develop empathy, and this changes the way I see people. I see brotherhood instead of differences. This makes it so not only do my thoughts change, also how I interact with people changes. It allows me to be warmer. It allows me to be kinder. It allows me to see past differences. Change occurs when the timing is right. I see this when I look at scientific history. At the times of certain inventions, people around the globe were commonly working on the same project. This happened during the development of the atomic era in the early 1900s, when the personal computer was developed in the 1970s and 80s, and now when social media is developing its day and age. Ideas spread. This also happens in other ways. In the 1960s, I had a friend who was a vegetarian. Her father, who is a meat and potatoes guy, scratched his head when she told him, and he said, "You mean you're only going to eat bread and potatoes?" We had to travel to look for a vegetarian dinner because restaurants did not have vegetarian entrees. A salad was some iceberg lettuce and a hard piece of tomato. The way we eat now has so dramatically changed from that time that many listeners couldn't even imagine that what I say is true. The change that took place wasn't because people marched for broccoli and salads on menus. No, it was just that the timing is right. I believe now is the time for thinking with heart and mind. By spending time trying to incorporate these ideas into life, I believe it encourages others throughout the globe to do the same where they are. We will only be able to change when we realize that we're all in this together, both as human beings and with the earth. When we see with our hearts as well as with our minds, we'll create the life that we want to have, a life in which we can flourish. I developed this podcast to not only share my thoughts on thinking with heart and mind, but to also provide exercises that interested listeners can use to further these ideas. For this episode, there are two such exercises. The first is to imagine a time when you interacted with a group of people, had an excellent time, and had no idea about their political persuasion. This could be at the workplace, it could be during a vacation, it could have been in your childhood when you played with a wide range of friends. Now imagine that at that outing, you arbitrarily split the group into two, and that they were of opposing political persuasions. To highlight this, you had them wear hats. Think about playing with them now. Would your knowing their political beliefs ruin your interactions? Should that really happen? The second part of the exercise is to think about people who really understand you. Is there anyone in your life who really understands how you see the world and how you interact and why? Are there any who understand you partly? If there are some who understand you, do you feel closer to those people? How many people do you work at trying to understand? What would happen to your relationships if you increased the number of people you tried to understand? These exercises will be put into the show notes, which can be found wherever you listen to podcasts or at this podcast website. To further help interested listeners with these ideas, at the podcast website at ronschneebaummd.com, which can also be reached by searching onbeinghappier.com, I have a picture with the words "Navigating Through Political Differences with Heart and Mind." This picture can be downloaded and used as a screensaver on your laptops or phones. I do this because I find if I have words in front of me of something I'm thinking about, it inspires me and gives me a chance to remember that I want to work on that. If you have any questions about this episode, email me. Write "questions" in the subject line of an email, and it's ron@onbeinghappier.com. If you have any comments about this episode or any future episodes or past episodes, write "comments" in the subject line. And if you'd like to receive a newsletter, which one day I will put together, write "newsletter" in the subject line. I try to publish these podcasts every 2 weeks, but given the realities of my work life, it doesn't come out to be that often. During the time in between episodes, think about the content. If you're streaming podcasts, spend a little bit of time thinking about this episode and these ideas. Because of your sharing, this podcast is heard throughout the world. I'm so grateful to you for that. I'm going to be taking a break before we have season 2. The second season, which will be different in nature, I'm excited about it. I look forward to doing some interviews with people who think with heart and mind. and that will restart in mid-September. Use this time to re-listen to some of these episodes to see if the idea clicks in you to really work at putting it into practice. I enjoy the time we spend together. Until our next meeting, what I think will be an exciting season, all my very best, and be well, Ron.